We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we record this podcast today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay our respects to elders past and present.
It's my turn. It was my turn 3 pregnancies ago.
There's no heartbeat yet.
There's no sperm.
I will do anything. I just want so much to be a mother. There's a line. There's a line. And we did a transfer, 1 embryo in each surrogate. I have learnt that I am so freaking amazing. Families come together in many different ways and we need to normalise this.
Have sex and get pregnant. It's that easy, right?
Not for 1 in 6 of us. From the makers of Beyond the Bump, we, Sophie, Jade and La, bring you Behind the Bump,
a place to share stories and shed light on miscarriage, IVF, infertility and more.
So if you're trying to conceive,
or if your friend is doing IVF, if you just love a moving story,
then Behind the Bump is the podcast for you.
Welcome to the season finale of Behind the Bump. Oh my God, can't believe it. Very special episode today. I'm one of your hosts, Lakshmi Wilson, and joined today by Sophie Pierce.
Hello, everyone.
And today we have Cece Jeffries with us from the Fertility Collective. I'm going to let her explain what she does. But yes, Cece, can you please take it away? Tell us a bit about yourself and who's in your family.
Thank you, girls. Thank you so much for having me. I think we could probably talk for 7 hours, but we'll try and keep it to one podcast episode. Yes, I'm Cece. I'm the founder of Fertility Collective. So yes, my story is my husband and I were hit over the head with an infertility diagnosis, something you never think is going to happen to you. And fortunately, we do have 3 children now, all 3 thanks to IVF. We've got an 8-year-old girl, 6-year-old boy, and a 4-year-old boy. But yes, I started Fertility Collective really to democratize the access to fertility support and really empower people to take control of their fertility health and their emotional well-being. I think what I know is that everyone's journey, and you girls would know this too, everyone's journey is just so different, but the focus is largely on the physical side of things, you know, what the egg's doing, what the sperm's doing, what the uterus is doing, and there's very little focus still on just what the emotional toll and how much it impacts your mental health. And yeah, so Fertility Collective is really somewhere where you can come and have your feelings validated by people who get it, but also it's a platform where, you know, people can be part of, where it's really easy to prioritize yourself and become the best version of you, because we cover fertility health, we cover emotional health and our physical health. So we've got breathwork classes, Pilates, nutrition, us, the nurse, we've got doctors, expert doctors and things like that. So it's really everything but the clinic. So people are, you know, really largely doing it alone still in a silent environment. And it has such broad knock-on effects to their work and their social life and their friendship groups. And I know you girls would know all about this, especially, you know, what you do and the guests you've had on, but it just impacts your whole life. Actually what happens in the lab is really quite small compared to how much it impacts everything else. So
yeah, I've been incredibly lucky that I haven't had any, you know, issues with fertility, but this entire series has been so eye-opening, just how all-encompassing, suffocating, isolating these journeys are. And even stories that you think kind of, when you say the dot points of the stories, you're like, oh, that's similar to what that couple went through. And then you hear the story and, you know, of course there's these common threads of isolation, the time it took up, the money it took, and all of those things. But they're all so unique as well. And so, yeah, that's just been incredibly eye-opening. So thank you so much for the work you do, because I'm sure you've helped so many women and couples in this space, because I think one of the common threads from so many of them, especially with IVF, is you get so about the numbers. Absolutely. As you say, you get there about, you know, how many eggs, how many embryos, how many do I have to transfer, how many took, 2-week wait, very prescriptive and mathematical, when so much of us wanting to be parents is like a yearning from the heart, which is not about maths, it's not about science. So yeah, so excited to speak to you today. I think for the women that are going through it, but also, you know, for people like me who are inevitably going to have people around us who are going through it, and how can we be a better friend, a better family member, and all of that. So I guess let's start, like, we don't want to shit on anyone, because I think everyone goes into things with the best intentions. And I think it happens with all forms of grief, loss, any hardships. But What are the things that you see come up time and time again that are either like well-meaning comments or well-meaning actions that actually for those going through it can be actually quite either offensive or, you know, just a further slap in the face?
It's a great topic. What happens a lot, and a lot of my community members and members will talk about this the whole time, is the comments like, if you've had a miscarriage, at least you can get pregnant, or, you know, at least it was early, and, you know, at least you're still young if you're going through IVF, at least you're still young, or, you know, at least you have three more embryos, or, you know, and this is something which people want to be educated. I think it's normally these well-meaning platitudes can be relentless when you're going in the fertility trenches, like, you know, a lot of you will know, but especially when you've tried to be open and vulnerable with these people, you know, especially family members, when you've tried to be open and vulnerable with, you know, your sister or your mum, and then they turn around and say, well, at least. It's normally well-intended, I know, and people really do want to fix you, and they really do want to help you, and they really want to offer their advice because it's better than being silent, you know, in their mind, but it really does add to the pain and the isolation because, you know, and we call this toxic positivity. And of course, you know, we all want to be positive and we all want to be optimistic, but, you know, it's just not realistic to expect ourselves to feel this way all the time when we're trying to conceive and we're getting knockback after knockback after knockback. So, you know, and when I say knockback, I mean, you know, another negative pregnancy test, another miscarriage, and an embryo loss, you know, the list goes on. So, you know, when we do get thrown back socially with our friends and family, you know, or at least this, at least that, you know, it really does hurt. And there's a lot of different, I actually get asked this all the time in my membership, you know, there's how do we respond to people?
That, yeah, because I was going to say, is it worth telling them, especially if they're going to be around for however long this journey is? Like,
both, it is absolutely worth telling them. And this is the thing, is because, you know, there's a lot of different ways we can respond to this. And like I always say, like I mentioned before, people need to be educated. People want to support you, but people also want to be educated on how to support you, especially our mum's generation, where no one really talked about any of this. But, you know, it's very, very common. It's one in six people do struggle to conceive and one in four have a miscarriage. And it's educating people. So, I mean, what I say to my, you know, members and community members is just send them a text message. You know, I love that. And I know it sounds like, but it's, you know, we don't need more confrontation when we're going through what we're going through. There's so much going on. We're just, you know, we're feeling a shell of ourselves. So, you know, a simple text message just saying, you know, this is really, really shit for me. I really appreciate that you want to help me, but these comments actually invalidate, you know, how I'm feeling and actually make me feel worse. And just tell them, honestly, just be really upfront and say, you know, a much better response, you know, would be, that sounds bloody hard and I'm so sorry you're going through this.
And I guess giving them the permission that you're not going to them asking for a solution.
Exactly.
Like, you have a team for that. And because I do think, as you said, you know, if you know someone going through it, you know they've already got all this negative news, this negativity, and we just want to fix.
Absolutely.
So I guess giving that permission of, I'm not coming to you because I expect you to fix this.
Exactly.
And
I think for people listening now who are like, okay, cool, I know not what to say, from like just a little anecdote from my own journey, and I've talked about this before, but I've had to actually think hard about why this meant so much to me. When I found out that our twins had both passed inside me, I remember there was a period of 3 weeks where I kind of was waiting to see if my body was going to naturally miscarry, and I hadn't left the house and I was obviously in deep grief, and I wasn't really wanting to see anyone. But there was one day where Jackson, my partner, convinced me, let's go get a massage. Like, you know, it was when you're in that state, you're like trying to bring on your you're just going through so many different layers of things. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll just go get a massage. We had a voucher. And anyway, we ran into my friend there, and it meant so much to me when I saw her, and she literally looked at me, and I know that people can't replicate this and like conjure up tears, but she looked at me and I could see the pain in her eyes, and she started crying. And I'm like, why did that help me so much more than anything anyone said? And it was just because that she was validating that I fucking feel that you lost something.
And I'm
because
sad
it's
for
something
you.
So not tangible. No one can really see what you've lost, but it's like, I validate that what you've lost is horrible for you. And I'm even sad that I'm crying. And like, that meant the world.
100%. I'm so sorry you went through that, by the way. That's a we'll take that one offline. But yeah, no, it's just, it's exactly right. It's spot on. It's just that validation because, you know, this is a really shitty chapter. It's, you know, there are so many reasons why it sucks so much when you've got your best friends falling pregnant so easily, having as many children as they want, you know, with not having to ever have a negative pregnancy test, not even having to, I mean, the emotions that come up with a fertility struggle or, you know, loss like you've been through are just so foreign to a lot of people, you know, and it's really, it's just unfair. Fertility is so unfair. Some people are fertile, some people are not. There's no reason. There's nothing you did, said, ate, drank,
yeah,
thought.
There's no rhyme or reason.
It is what it is. Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. So unfair.
And so what are ways that we can either ask those around us to be helpful or if it's, you know, someone who's on the sideline watching in, how can we be helpful? I think so often you worry that if you bring it up, I don't know, you kid yourself that maybe for a second they're going to have forgotten what they're going through and you're going to be the one that reminds them. Is that actually a worry or should we just send the text saying, thinking of you, send a love heart? Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
You can't say anything that's going to offend them unless it's at least, you know, it's very, you know, just send a love heart. Just, you know that they're going in for egg collection that morning, send a love heart. You know, you don't actually need to say anything. It's just that to know that you're in their thoughts and that they know how shit it is and how awful it is and unfair it is that you're going through what you're going through and they didn't have to, means the world. And that's all it is. We don't need to be these rocket scientists coming up with these amazing words to say, you know, whatever. It's just acknowledging that what they're going through is really shit and it's unfair.
That actually takes the pressure off though, because it's like, that's the hard part is being like, what can I possibly say that's going to make this better or fix it? Nothing. And so that gives you a bit of paralysis and you go, oh, it's just too awkward. I won't bring it up then. But we all just lose sight of the fact, like you said,
because we've never been taught about grief in general. You know, it's like one of the only definites that we're all going to go through in life, yet we've never been taught how to deal with it. So, I mean, I know until I did this podcast, I just completely avoided it. And I have regrets of how I feel like I haven't supported friends in the past when they've gone through, you know, many different types of grief because I just didn't, I was like, well, if I can't fix it, then what good am I being in their space?
And so I get told that the whole time by my community and by family members of people, my members. And I mean, that's such a common, you know, and you don't need to feel guilty. Okay. We don't know. And, you know, fertility is such, it is such a fragile, precious topic, and it's really hard to know what to say. But it is really just that love heart, that you're thinking of you. I'm so sorry. If there's anything I can do, let me know. Do you want to go for a walk and talk about it? Do you want to go for a walk and not talk about it? It's all those things. It's really, you can't fix it. And it's just acknowledging that someone is in a really shit situation, and that's all it is.
So if I do have a friend who I know is going through, you know, fertility struggles, a long fertility journey, and I've fallen pregnant at the drop of a hat, how am I best either to tell her, or on the flip side, if I was in her shoes, is it right for me to request a way to be told that information?
Yeah, great question. Do you know, it is one of those things, I get asked this the entire time as well, and I just want to say, pregnancy announcements to everyone listening who is struggling to have a baby, pregnancy announcements are like completely soul crushing. Yeah. And it's okay if you find it really, really, really hard. It's normal and it's human. It's a reminder of how easy it is for some people and how hard it is for you. But also on the flip side, to everyone who is pregnant or newly pregnant, you deserve to be so freaking excited about your pregnancy. You deserve to be so excited. But it's just, it is really nice to give some thought when sharing your news with someone who is really desperate to share the same news. So I do recommend sending a text message. I recommend just giving them the heads up first before you share it on social media or before you share it at a girl's luncheon, and they'll be in a position to react with everyone else. It is such a hard thing to, you know, this is universal. The pregnancy announcements are, you know, because fertility is so unfair. It's like, oh my God, like you drink every weekend, you take drugs. How are you pregnant? I'm so, you know, whatever it is. There's so many reasons why it's so easy for some people and so hard for others. But, you know, don't tell them at a girl's dinner in front of everyone and you know, ask them to react. Don't tell them in front of, you know, a million and one people. I just think they are so happy for you, but they're really sad it's not them still.
Yeah, two things can be true, I guess. Don't also have guilt that you're sad. You can be happy and sad at the same
time. Yeah. You can be so happy that your best friend is having a baby. I mean, absolutely so happy, but you can then, it's a huge reminder that it's still not you, you know, and the pain is really valid. It's a reminder of your grief, particularly with, you know, if you've been through a miscarriage and, you know, and you're sitting there and, you know, your baby, you're looking at the milestones, you know, your baby would be 6 months now and they're about, you know, it's all just, it's so, so difficult. So just let them process it in their own time. I think just a little heads up text message is really, really, really nice. And I do research in my community the whole time about this and 99.9% of people agree they would like to receive a text message.
This is a very broad question, but I'm thinking back to like, and what we even just mentioned at the start, how much the emotional, mental, spiritual hits you take kind of take a sideline in the face of all the medical things you're doing. And for me, I definitely didn't do anything or enough for those parts of me. I think because I was, and I think a lot of people listening can relate to, you're in such a rush, you know, like all you want to do is be pregnant, stay pregnant, have a baby, and you just kind of have this feeling of like, I'll just deal with that later, I'll just squash it down. But if we can give some people listening who may be in that place some advice on what are some things that you know of that you can do for yourself at home, you know, some of the more readily available things to you that you can do either free or cheaply at home to look after your emotional mental health when you're feeling disappointed after a negative test or a loss or a failed transfer, and then maybe some of the bigger things that you think are worth investing in that can help you.
No, it's so true. And, you know, and I do just want to say on that for everyone listening, what you've listed just then, you know, a disappointment after a negative pregnancy test, a miscarriage, an embryo loss, these really have a huge impact on your mental health. And I think with the reason a fertility struggle impacts our mental health so much is because our pain is often hidden. You know, we're absolutely overwhelmed by the uncertainty of if we will ever be a mum. We feel disconnected to friends and family because, you know, we're going through this and they don't understand. And there are triggers everywhere. Every time you jump on Instagram, there's someone else who's pregnant or got their little perfect family of four or whatever it is. And you really are grieving the life that you thought you'd have. The people, you know, like I said, the people closest to us don't understand. So they don't know how to support us. So we don't get the support that we need. And it takes over our entire life, you know, a negative pregnancy test, a miscarriage, an embryo loss, everything you just mentioned takes over our entire life, you know, from it impacts our work, it impacts our friendship groups, it impacts our finances. And there's just that constant fear and anxiety about the future. And so, I mean, I see self-blame, which I hate seeing self-blame, but, you know, people do blame themselves and, you know, which is, they shouldn't and they don't need to, but, you know, they do automatically blame themselves for whatever. But, you know, I guess the number one thing is people don't know how to support us, so they don't. And the number one thing here is, I will say, you know, my number one cheap thing I recommend is jumping into Fertility Collective membership, where the number one focus is prioritizing and protecting your mental health and your emotional health. You get breathwork classes, you know, which are such a beautiful way to lower stress, lower anxiety, and really ground you. There's Pilates classes, you know, you don't have to leave the house. We don't want to leave the house often when we're grieving. So, you know, you can do them at home and feel strong. And there's gratitude journaling, there's digital detox prompts, but most of all, there's just a community of people who get it. And people you can talk to 24/7 to support you. And that's really, when you say a cheap thing at home, that's, you know, of course what I recommend. But of course you can spend a fortune on acupuncture, massage, a weekend away. You can, absolutely. But it's all about prioritizing you, which, you know, includes setting boundaries and saying no, and which is all part of nurturing yourself. But it's a really shitty chapter, like I mentioned, and the most important person in this chapter is you. So, you know, it is just stepping away and just bringing it all back to yourself. This is, it's the grief of a miscarriage, the grief of a negative pregnancy test, the grief of an embryo loss is so real and so heavy. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, we often just jump to the next, okay, we've had a miscarriage. Okay, so when can we try again? Or, you know, we've had a negative pregnancy. Okay, so when can we transfer again? You know, we're always, and we don't have time to grieve, you know, and that's another thing we talk about a lot in the membership, and we've got tools for that active grieving so we can actively grieve so our grief doesn't build up and then, you know, cause a tidal wave.
I think it's like almost like you are trying to mitigate that uncertainty that you're talking about. I think that's maybe partly why you don't want to address it or face it in the moment, because like I agree with what you said, like after a miscarriage or, you know, when I started having them recurrently, it was like not only was there the grief of losing that baby, which I think some people kind of don't understand that either, and they'll say, oh, you'll have another one or whatever, but you're grieving that baby that you've held and you've loved.
And you've named it. I know, exactly.
And you, yeah, and all the dates.
You've planned and their then, first birthday in your head. You knew what wedding you were going to at 35 weeks pregnant.
And then you have that grief of like, well, what's wrong with me? You know, I never thought I'd be, why is this happening to me? Like, is there something wrong with my body? Is there something, am I not meant to be a mother? You know, you question yourself like karmically and spiritually and run yourself over through the coals like that. And then there is that bigger kind of, not bigger, but umbrella grief of like, am I ever going to have, well, for me, it was another baby. I was very blessed to already be a mother when I was going through it. But like, or am I ever going to fall pregnant? And like, it does, it pervades through everything. And it's not just when you're trying, it's like you forget how much it's like every part of your cycle is like just this technical kind of mathematical game of like, well, should I be going there? Or what if I miss when I ovulate? Can I do that? Can I book that weekend? I don't know if I can. What if I'm pregnant? Yeah. Should I have a drink? Should I change my deodorant? Like, should I get off forums? Am I on them? It's just like so much hypervigilance.
And then everyone's trying to tell you if you just didn't stress so much, you'd get pregnant and you just want to punch them in the face.
People in war-torn countries are getting pregnant. I think it is a way to just try and control some of that overriding anxiety of like, just I got to get there, I just got to focus on the next thing. But in speaking about how it does pervade through all of our lives, obviously that affects our employment a lot for those who are kind of traditionally employed with a boss and a structure. How can we have those conversations at work? Like, I've literally gone to work having a miscarriage before. I have also gotten to work late one day thinking my boss would understand when I got there. I was like, sorry, I was ovulating. Like, we had to have sex last weekend. And she was like, is that a good excuse? And I was like, oh, is it? So,
I love that you told them that.
I thought we were close enough.
Yeah, you're like, do I give you the information? Do I not? I mean, I imagine the amount of appointments. And so often it seems that the appointments are like, okay, we've done the blood test, which means your transfer must be in 2 days.
Absolutely.
At this exact time.
Yeah. How do you explain that you're not just like pissing around out of hours?
Yeah. So this is, like I said, you know, the people are often doing this in a silent environment and it has the biggest impact on your work. And balancing fertility treatment and work is really bloody tough for everyone listening. You are not alone. The emotions, the logistics, the time, it's all just bloody hard. And it can also feel really scary disclosing something so personal about your body. Because at the end of the day, it's our body going through this. You know, it's something so personal to your manager who might be a male or might be, you know, can be really scary. But if you can, and we talk about this a lot in, you know, the membership is, you know, it can really alleviate or just remove a whole lot of anxiety that doesn't need to be there, because I think fertility treatment is stressful enough without having, you know, the added stress of having to keep this complex secret from those who you work with every day. Let's look at fertility treatment first and then we'll look at miscarriage. So fertility treatment first, I always say prepare some notes on what your treatment looks like. So what's involved, what dates roughly you think you may, you know, be late in, or you may need a scan, you may need a blood test, or, you know, just get in your head a bit of a picture, a bit of a plan of what it might look like for a treatment cycle. Because it's no different to cancer treatment or a knee replacement or a death in the family. You know, a lot of managers have absolutely no idea about fertility, but they want to be educated. You know, they really do want to be a better manager, you know, and you'll retain staff. And there's so many reasons why a manager wants to be educated. But I would also then check your workplace policies, because it's particularly in the UK, you know, I mean, these might give you, you know, a bit of an idea as to how much time, you know, you might be allowed off the fertility leave. And I think if you work for the government, you get a certain amount of time, and then eventually we will roll that out across Australia and everywhere else as well. But just check the policies just so you understand what you are entitled to in your contract, such as, you know, flexible working hours and all that sort of thing. But be prepared for there not to be one, particularly, you know, in a lot of the agencies or workplaces that, you know, a lot of us work in, there are none. So, you know, you are having to do a lot of educating here. But, you know, once you've done your notes, you've checked the policies, I would book in a confidential chat with your manager and just, or whoever you report to, and just tell them that you want to discuss something, you know, that's personal in a private space, and then explain to them that you need some time off for medical appointments relating to fertility treatment. And just remember, these are just medical appointments and should be treated as medical appointments. Mm. Just like anything else we go through, you know, in medically, you know, it's just a medical appointment. So just be clear, I think, with your manager. One where I see this being tricky and causing stress is just be clear on who knows and who you want to know in the company, if you're in a company or wherever you are, but because it is personal information. So you might want to say to them at the beginning, look, this is personal information. This is something I would like to be kept private. And I'd remind them at the beginning of the conversation and at the end of the conversation, that you'd like to be kept confidential. And, you know, when it comes to loss, so if, you know, we just to your point before, it's, thankfully, Pink Elephant Support are doing an amazing job in this space. Sam Pays is incredible. And if you don't already, you will have miscarriage leave very, very soon, hopefully. But, you know, fertility treatment is tricky. You know, miscarriage, you can treat it. You know, you get bereavement leave and things like that. Mm. And you should use your bereavement leave. But fertility treatment is tricky because there's so much grief that comes with a fertility cycle not working, and procedures and egg retrievals and recovery and embryo transfers, and there's so much involved. But it is just, if you can talk to your boss about it, it can relieve a lot of stress and anxiety.
And any tips for getting through the 2-week wait? What do you generally see in terms of, is it beneficial to test? Is it beneficial not to test? Does it depend on the individual? How does someone get through that time?
Yeah. The $1 million question.
Yeah.
It is. And look, honestly, so if it does depend on who, what sort of person you are, it's a really hard question to answer actually without knowing what sort of person you are, because, you know, a lot of people, I was a huge tester. I tested every day because I wanted to know if the line was getting darker. I wanted to know if my HCG levels were going up. I mean, I think my dad was a doctor, so I used to get bloody blood tests every 2 or 3 days for, you know, I just could. I asked him, you know, that I just, that's what I needed that. Whereas a lot of people don't need that. So it's a tricky question to answer because it really does depend on, you know, I have so many girls that I talk to who just don't test till the last day, the testing day. And that works really well for them. They just
greatly admire their willpower.
Well, so I was going to say, in my logical mind, I'm like, yeah, well, you wait and then you know, and then you think about it and you're like, how? Like, it's sitting there like this ticking time bomb. And
totally, I think it, like, the addiction creeps up on you though. I feel like for a lot of people at the start, you don't test or you just wait till a missed period, and then, you know, a year in and you're like 10 DPO, could do it if it was first morning urine, but, you know, I'll just keep another one for tomorrow because it's not a definite yes, it's not a no yet. Like, you get so caught up in it.
But I blame first response because, you know, they've made it so easy for us to test so early, you know. And I remember doing a reel about this recently, or not recently, actually probably about a year ago, but it was like, you know, the doctor says, just whatever you do, don't test early. It's like, but why? I can. Like, of course I'm going to, you know. And it went completely viral. Everyone was like, 100%. Like, it's just, it's a choice, you know. I mean, look, it would be much easier for us if we couldn't test and we didn't have the option. But unfortunately, we have the option and it's just down the road at the chemist.
Yeah.
And what do you think are ways to, you know, whether we test or we don't test, like ways that we can distract ourselves, or do we even want to distract ourselves during that time? Like, yeah. What are just some tools or strategies during that time?
Yeah. Look, the 2-week wait is unquestionably hard, but I always like with any weight, though, I mean, you know, we wait for specialist appointments. We wait, you know, I've got girls, members at the moment who are waiting, you know, 3 months to see an endometriosis surgeon. And there's so much waiting. So, you know, the 2 week wait is absolutely hell. Absolutely. And this fertility journey is riddled with waiting. You know, it's all we are doing is waiting. So we're in survival mode. And again, it's why I created the membership platform where we can come and we can control everything that we can control, because, you know, we can't control the result, but there's a lot we can control. And when we have more control, we have more confidence, because what happens is when there's so much uncertainty and there's no control, our confidence gets completely flipped on its head. I mean, no, for me, Cece going through this was very different to Cece 10 years earlier. Like, I was a shell of myself, you know. I mean, for me, it was caused full-blown anxiety, caused panic attacks. I've never had a panic attack. I was starting to get these panic attacks because I was so riddled with the uncertainty and the overwhelm and the anxiety and the just the unknown about, was I going to be a mum, you know? And this is something I'd always wanted to be. It was like my dream. I used to babysit when I was, you know, 7. And it was like, oh, my fucking gosh. Like, is this seriously my reality? So the way I think, how I say, you know, how do you deal with a 2 week wait? It's like how I say, how do you deal with a fertility struggle? Because we're always waiting.
Yeah.
Every day is a wait. So again, it's all about prioritizing, you know, yourself, controlling what you can control to boost, you know, just lower stress and anxiety, which is all, you know, the Fertility Collective membership's all about. But obviously, you know, controlling what you can control and just boosting that confidence, because then when triggers and things like that, or, you know, seeing something on social media, like our threshold, it's about building our threshold. Like, our threshold is so low every month, something that, you know, negative pregnancy test or a miscarriage or shit news or a diagnosis or whatever it is, our threshold just gets lower and lower and lower. And, you know, you guys, you know, would know a lot about this with, you know, your podcast. I mean, you know, you just, like I said, you become an absolute shell of yourself. Yeah, it's a really shitty journey.
I feel like for me, and this is something it obviously sounds like your membership provides too, but like, this is such a simple thing and an obvious thing. And some people are really private and they don't want to share with anyone. But if you can, there are a lot of ways to find other people who are going through what you're going through, like whether it's, you know, we have a Facebook group Behind the Bump, there's Instagram accounts, like your account, people have mentioned your name in our Facebook group, you know, because you're such a great help. But when I had my last successful pregnancy, I happened to happened to be talking to a woman who I've never met her still, but we literally got like a positive test probably 2 days apart, and we just like started chatting online, and we were literally at the point where we were sending each other voice messages. Never met her, but like, just going through that is so binding. And just to fucking literally get all of that out of your body, because like you said, it's so much anxiety, there's nothing you can control. But sometimes just to like release the valve, and your partner can get it as much as they get it, or your friends or your mum, but like, she would be like having the exact same thoughts as me, and like the exact same level of obsessive, where we could be like
100%.
Oh my God, this just happened. I just felt like a twinge on the lower quadrant of my abdomen, which I had with my last minute, but do you think it means this, you know? And she would go there with me. And like, that is really helpful if you can just find, they don't have to be in your real life, they can be online.
No, exactly, yeah. Right. And that's why I've got in Fertility Collective membership, I've got a group that, you know, I've got secondary infertility, I've got miscarriage, I've got just started trying, I've got endometriosis, you know, I've got PCOS, male factor, solo mum by choice, every single different situation and diagnosis. And so, you know, everyone's in there talking about, you know, and it's just, it's so comforting. Because I remember when we got knocked over the head and our diagnosis was a male factor diagnosis, and we the doctor gave us news, and we went home and sat on the couch and we're like, what the fuck? Like, okay. Like, we had nowhere to go. And I, you know, Google is horrendous. Like, just for everyone listening, don't go to Google, because only people write bad stories on Google. You don't, if you had a good result, you actually don't go to Google. You only go there if you had a bad result. And it's just, it's so overwhelming. So yeah.
And we've touched on partners briefly. How can we keep like keep it together? Like, what are ways to still love one another? And I guess, like, I imagine there's so much guilt surrounded with probably not enjoying sex anymore because sex would become such a chore. Like, should we just have the expectation that that's okay? That can feel like a chore, and hopefully one day you will enjoy it again. Or are there things we can try and do to enjoy it being intimate with one another? How can we, keep as a team rather than, I guess, you know, going in different directions?
Yeah, I know. And that's a really hard part of this. It really is. And a lot of people struggle with this. So everyone listening, again, like, you are not alone if you're finding you're drifting from your partner. Because I always say, my number one is just a 5-minute check-in every morning. How are you feeling? Both of you say to each other, how are you feeling? What are you worried about? You know, how can I support you? Just, or not even 5 minutes, 5-second check-in every morning. I also love, just, I'll go back to the sex thing, but I love the going on a date where you say, we're not talking about fertility, you know, trying to just remember the fun you used to have before making a baby was even on the cards. You know, go and have it, you know, whether it's a bushwalk or a gym session or a big night out or a dinner or whatever it is, you know, just go and have a date regularly, you know, where you don't talk about the fertility, and then schedule time to have a date where you do talk about the fertility, you know, and keep them really separate, because often we go on dates and we have the best intentions of both of us of having a great night. And then, you know, of course we start talking about the fertility and then it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
It's really shit. And, so, you know, really be specific about that. I love that. And I see that working the whole time. With the sex thing, and this is universal, we don't want to have sex when we're not ovulating. Let's be honest.
That is what our bodies are literally so programmed.
Exactly. And some of us do, and that's incredible. But most of us, when we are ovulating and we're actively trying, it's like game on. Try as much as we can. And then when we clearly know we've stopped ovulating, it's like this weird thing in our head. It's like, no, save the sperm for next time. You know, it's like, even though it just doesn't work like that. But there's a lot of ways. So intimacy is really important, and closeness and touch and hugging and sitting on the couch and rubbing each other's feet if you like feet, or massaging, or some people don't like feet. Massaging, or, you know, just lying on the couch together and just, you know, or a morning hug or a hug before bed or a spooning in bed. Or there's a lot of ways you can keep the intimacy alive without shagging, you know. Do you like my reaction?
Is that how you're shouting? She's like a little together, like jackrabbit, like over there.
Like a monkey.
We know how
symbols.
You work.
Anyway, so it's very, you know, it's very, yeah, I think it is very important to, you know, acknowledge. And also sometimes guys need that explaining, that need that explained to them as well, and particularly when you're going through IVF or fertility treatment and you're jacked up on hormones potentially and you're so emotional because of these freaking hormones. The last thing you want to do is get naked and get into bed when you're feeling so bloated or whatever it is. So again, that's communication. So communication, you know, there's a lot of other ways to keep intimacy alive, and just that check-in, you know, just that regular check-in with each other, because guys hurt just as much as girls hurt with this. And 40% of people going through fertility treatment, it's the male factor. And, you know, again, something we don't talk about enough, but it's really hard on the bloke too.
I say that to my husband even now. I'm like, can we just have a pash and both of us know it's not going anywhere?
Can you imagine?
You know, remember back in the day when you used to have a good old-fashioned dry hump? It was great. I feel like nowadays it's like the second you start kissing, it's like it doesn't have to. And I just have to say that. I'm like, I'm going to pash you now, but we're not having sex. Like, don't even try. Sometimes it does. But, I do feel like when life gets busy and you're a proper adult with responsibilities and stuff, all of a sudden it's like the only time intimacy comes up when it's like gonna, you know, go on this linear trajectory towards sex. And sometimes that's just the last thing you want. You just want a bit of a foot rub and a dry hump.
For those as well, I'll say, like, if you aren't doing fertility treatments and you are just trying to achieve pregnancy spontaneously at home,
imagine that.
I'm not suggesting be deceitful. But for me, I didn't actually ever tell Jackson when I was ovulating. Like, I didn't make it like, oh, now we're having
I'm sure he couldn't
sex.
Tell when you're like, Jackson, get home from work. I'm not ovulating. Well, oh, no, babe.
It worked doubly because he'd just be like, oh, fuck, she's just so psyched and horny and like we're just having all this great sex, and he didn't think too much into it of like she wants something out of it. It was just like, cool, she comes really alive 1 week. Yeah. But I think that's just a way you can make, like, you don't have to make it clear that, like, I'm ovulating. Let's put your penis in. Like,
I think that's actually less pressure on the guy doing it that way. I think that's a good way to do it. You can laugh about it.
Should
later.
You try and convince yourself to schedule in non-ovulatory sex? Is that good?
Who has time for that?
Nah, too much pressure.
We've got enough on. I think, I don't think, I think it's just, it's about the communication and just explaining what's going on. And you know, this is, I'm talking about when we're into the fertility trenches, you know, I'm talking about the sex then. It becomes very hard, you know, and you do get it back, but it is very hard when you're in it.
Now, what about secondary infertility? I feel like that's not spoken about a lot. La, you've touched on your experience with it. How does this differ? Or what have you seen ways this has differed in terms of emotions and that sort of thing compared to primary infertility?
Oh, it's such a secondary infertility is sadly so common, and it often comes as such a shock. And that's such a hard part of it because, you know, we might have conceived our first baby really, really easily. And a lot of people do. And I'm sure a lot of people in your community, you know, have had their first baby really easily. And then their second one is just taking longer, and it comes as such a shock. And it's particularly hard because, you know, you have one child already. So there can be that guilt, you know, feeling like you're not grateful for the one that you have. You know, of course, you are so grateful for the child that you have, but you're also allowed to grow your family like so many other people do so easily. Well, I have members, you know, saying things like, you know, my child just doesn't understand why they can't have a sibling when everyone in their school class can have a sibling, you know, or I have people saying, you know, I can be so thankful for the child that I have, but I'm so devastated for the one that I want. You know, and another thing I hear all the time in my membership is, you know, I just wish my friends with multiple children knew how lucky they were. Secondary infertility is really, really hard. It's not recognized like primary infertility is. So therefore, there isn't as much support. There isn't that open dialogue like there is, thankfully, now more with infertility. So certainly, you know, inside Fertility Collective membership, I can honestly say to you that 40% of the girls in there would be experiencing secondary infertility.
And I feel like this, the second my first child turned one, I swear every single human I came across was like, I feel like people have kind of learnt, you know, I feel like back in the day it was like I'm sure it still happens a lot. But, you know, the second you're married, people back in the day used to be like, when you're having a baby, and I feel like people have kind of been like, oh, okay, no, there might be, I won't say that. Whereas once you've had one, it's like, oh, well, then she clearly can have babies. And I feel like the second my daughter turned one, it was like, when's she getting a sibling? So I can only imagine, you know, if you've been trying for years after and, you know, your child's maybe 4 or 5, even older, you would just be asked. Yeah.
And
all
really,
the time.
I mean, the really painful part of it is you're asked by the sibling, by the child you've got, you know, they're asking for a sibling. So you're not, you're hurting so much. And then you see your child who, you know, I mean, that's something I see the whole time. It's absolutely devastating. So it's something which, you know, again, you know, and I, to your point about, you know, being asked the whole time, I do a huge amount of awareness around that on Fertility Collective's Instagram page is just don't ask people when they're going to have a baby, whether it's the first, second, third, fourth, you know, whatever it is, just don't ask. But you've got no idea what's going on behind closed doors, and you're effectively asking about someone's body. And it's like, when did you last use your bowels? Like, when, you know, I mean, you know, you're looking.
When did you get your prostate checked?
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
what about, is it at all acceptable to say something more like, would you like to have another? Or do you just say, like, don't mention it at all?
Look, I think people would tell you. I think if it's a conversation they want to have, let them have it.
Actually heard of someone who, it was someone out in public, asked them about when they're having another baby, and she turned around and said, "Oh, and when did you last have your prostate checked?" And she goes, "That felt weird, didn't it?" And he goes, "Yeah." And she goes, "Yeah, it does when someone asks you questions about your body."
I love that. It's true, because it's like you're talking about your body. It's like, I don't know when the sperm's going to get to the egg and the egg's going to, and the embryo is going to implant. I've got no idea. You know, ask whoever, the embryologist or the lab, or if you're at home trying, like, no one knows. Like, we don't, you know, you just don't know, you know, when you're going to have another one, unless, you know, you're early pregnant and you do know then. But even then, it's just often such a fragile time. So
I had a miscarriage before I had my first daughter. And I, after the miscarriage, had a lot of confusion around my identity. I think we can all relate. The minute you know you're pregnant, as we were saying earlier, you've planned out the next 9 months, you've planned out the months after that, as we were saying, oh, that event is on then, I'll have a 4 month old, or that event's on then, oh, I'll be 25 weeks pregnant. And I think, and this is not taking away from secondary infertility or miscarriages after you've had a living child, but I had a lot of confusion around, so am I a mum? You know, I had those weeks where all I thought about was being a mum. I very much felt like a mum because I had this baby inside me. Do you have any, I guess, words for people who are going through that kind of confusion, you know?
Absolutely. Anyone trying to have a baby is a mum.
Yeah.
End of story. That's all I'll say. Anyone trying to have a baby is a mum. That's, you know, you've got so much love to give. That's why you're trying to have a baby, and you are a mum. And that's end of story for me.
Similarly, I guess, you know, Mother's Day will be not far off when this comes out. Mm. Milestones coming up, or I guess anniversaries. What are those days often like? I've heard so many people say often the lead up is worse than the day itself, but how can we go easy on ourselves during these times?
Yeah. Look, it's, and I mean, my dad died, you know, recently, and not recently, probably in, you know, a year ago now, but, you know, it's like this, what you say, anniversaries are so hard. The lead up to is debilitating grief for a lot of people who've had a pregnancy loss, any form of grief, whether it's the death of your father, the death of your baby, the death of your, it's all grief, you know, but the lead up is absolutely often worse. And then the day comes and it's a bit of a relief when it's just over. Mother's Day, I see this the whole time. The lead up is absolutely awful. I always say to people, just do you that day. Don't say yes to anything. Don't do anything. Set your boundaries. Just choose something. You know, if you've got a partner, choose something nice to do with them, plan ahead, you know, like really plan ahead, because you don't want to be hit with it on the morning and, you know, not have a plan. But it, again, it all just comes back to prioritizing you. Like, this is such a shit chapter. Just do you. Don't try and please other people. Don't say yes to things you don't want to go to. And that includes baby showers and 30th birthday lunches and gender reveal parties or whatever it is. You don't need to go. It's not going to matter in 2 years' time if you went or not. It's not going to matter in 6 months' time if you went or not. We don't need to be people pleasers now. We just need to please ourselves. Yeah.
And anyone who's close to you is going to understand why you don't want to be at a gender reveal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think stay off Instagram on those days too. Like,
absolutely.
As much as it's not fair, if you want to be on Instagram, you have to be excluded. But like, no good feelings come from going on there on those days where the feed's flooded with happy mums and babies.
Absolutely. And I say that to any the whole time, even if you're just going through treatment, just stay off. You know, I call it the digital detox. And, you know, it's a universal thing, obviously, but it's, there are triggers everywhere on our devices. Every time we look at them, like, they don't make us feel better. They make us feel worse, because we're looking at other people's lives, which we normally, our parents would never have known what Shelley in LA was doing, you know, and now it's like, oh, Shelley's got 3 kids. Oh my God, how does she have 3 kids? And, you know, it's just that constant looking at people.
Comparison.
Yes, over, you know, wherever they are in the world, and having access to everyone else's easy fertility stories. And there's just triggers everywhere. They make us feel like shit. So just, we don't need to be made to feel more shit. We're already feeling shit. So, you know, just think about every time you pick up your device, like, certainly not in bed at night. Certainly if you want to have a good night's sleep, leave it out of your bedroom 6 o'clock onwards, and no phones, nothing, no Instagram, no social media, no, you know, it's such a toxic, it doesn't do us any good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We spoke, I think, mostly about this before, about kind of the ways to be a support for someone that you know is going through a hard time. And I guess around days like that, you know, it's probably a day when you could have a bit more awareness and send those messages. Some other things that I just wanted to talk about and see if you had any other things that you think people can do to help. But something that I always found was a really nice thing to do for someone that's quite easy to do and doesn't really require much from them is dropping off food or making a meal. You know, it's that thing where I think we all do it. Like there's a death and everyone just goes, oh, fuck, and they take to their kitchen and make a meal and drop. It's like, as humans, we're just drawn to this, like, I don't know what to do, but I know food I can make something that's nourishing and nurturing and is going to take a practical thing off their hands. And I found it really lovely when people did that for me and they didn't, I didn't have to even let them in the house. They'd be like, I just dropped off a meal on the doorstep. I've gone.
Absolutely. Or like,
do you want, you know, I'm coming in 20, no pressure to let me in.
Exactly. And making a meal takes effort, which shows you care, you know, absolutely. Yes. And that's the thing, whether it's a miscarriage or it's all grief, you know, whether it's you've lost an embryo and you can't function, you can't get to the supermarket to make a meal. You don't want to think about like any form of fertility grief. I agree. A meal is amazing. And really, because it shows someone cooking something is time and they've gone to, they cooked something for 2 hours and they've delivered it. It's a really nice way to show your support. I agree. I think the number one thing here though is just forgive them, you know, forgive your friend, like forgive them if they don't, you know, they're not the life of the party, or they don't come to your, you know, your birthday breakfast, or they don't come to your baby shower, whatever it is, you know, that just forgive them, you know, if they don't return your calls, if they don't return your text messages, just forgive them. They're hurting and they're grieving. And just, you know, I do think check in and just ask if they're okay. You know, are you okay, love heart, or, you know, whatever it is, just they'll know you're thinking of them. And that means a lot. And often, you know, with fertility, you know, we, now there's a lot more education around this, but, you know, we didn't know what to say, so no one would say anything, and then it's just quiet and it's very, very, very lonely. But just, you know, the friends that do say, you know, are you okay? You know, I wish there was something I could do. Let me know if there is anything I can do. I'm thinking of you. This is so shit. Means the world. And also another big thing is support their lifestyle choices. You know, if they want to do hot yoga and then drink chili oil, like let them. You know what I mean? Like we will do anything to try and get pregnant. Don't you agree? Like we will do anything. We'll try everything and anything. And the last thing we need is judgment. Like we don't need to deal with someone saying, oh my God, like are you serious? That's not gonna work. Like just let them do what they want to do. People go hard on the acupuncture or whatever it is, you know, just let them do it. They've done their research, it's their body, just let them do it. Don't criticize what they're doing. So support their lifestyle choices. And also just try and put yourself in their shoes. Just think, oh my gosh, you know, for friends particularly, oh, I've got two kids. God, imagine if I didn't have these two kids, that would be really shit. Oh, that's what she's going through, you know. Just try and think about their situation, which is, you know, it's like with any grief. Oh, I'm really close with my dad. Oh, she lost her dad. Oh, that's shit.
And maybe pick someone else to whinge to about sleepless nights.
Absolutely.
Or snotty noses. So,
just pick your audience on that. And that's just, absolutely. And that's just a no-brainer. But unfortunately, we do a lot of, we're exposed to that a lot. You know,
one of those comments where people are like, oh, you can have mine. She's so annoying
this
morning.
Gosh. Oh. I know, and the constant complaining. And it's, do you know what? It is just acknowledging that someone is trying so hard to have a baby and they can't at the moment, and it's really shit. You know, so just being aware.
I just felt like I was shitting on someone for saying those comments. But I, like you, Sophie, I remember saying some stupid things to my friend that was struggling with it. Like, so I have compassion for, you know, wherever you're at in this, if you haven't gone through it or not. And like, I totally get that.
And when and if they have a child, they can whinge away and there's no judgment there. But
oh no, and I'm the same. I mean, this is my my whole life is living and breathing fertility struggles. I was the same too. So, you know, don't, and until you've been
no
through
judgment.
It, there's no judgment at all. people want to help and they don't know what to say. And that's why we're talking today, you know, so we can raise more awareness. But, you know, just listen to them. Listen to them, you know, is really big, and just be there for them, you know, and that's with everything really. But don't worry. I mean, gosh, I've done 10 million terrible things to support someone going through things as well. And, you know, I only know now.
And still giving it a go is better than silence, I
absolutely
think. Like avoiding. Totally. Like avoidance.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we feel like there's a huge topic that we kind of wanted to talk about today, but it was a big question that got sent in a lot, and I definitely can probably sit here for an hour and talk about my anxiety through this time, which is being pregnant after loss. We want to give it the proper time that it deserves. So just want everyone listening to know we're not like purposefully leaving that out. We get that that is a massive emotional struggle to be in, mental struggle. And we would like to have Cece back at some point to just solely talk about that and do a focused episode on that. So just wanted to, let everyone know that that is coming.
Before we wrap up, if there's anyone going through this or they're about to embark on an IVF journey or any kind of, I guess, new road in their fertility journey, do you have any words of wisdom for them?
Oh, do you know what? Just prioritize you. Like, I know this is really hard for people pleasers, and I used to be a massive people pleaser, but it's just so important to nurture you and your emotional health. You know, set the boundaries with your friends and family, and even, you know, and even work if you can, like we talked about before. But this is a really tough chapter, but it is a chapter, and you are the most important person in this chapter, because it's your body and it's your mental health. And it's okay if you go quiet, miss some parties, miss some of the fun stuff, you know, not have good chat right now. Like, you'll be back, you know. I never thought I'd be back, and I'm back, you know. Yeah, that would be my word of wisdom, words of wisdom.
I love that.
Thank you
so much, Cece, firstly for coming on, and also just generally for the work you do.
Yeah.
It's been an honor to speak to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that brings us to the end of season one of Behind the Bump. Thank you so much to everyone who has listened, showed their support, or given us feedback on our first season of Behind the Bump.
Yes, and because you loved it so much, we are coming back with a season two. So keep your eyes and ears peeled.
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at behindthebump.podcast or search for our closed private Facebook page just by typing in Behind the Bump as well. We want to give a huge thanks to Lakshmi, who's been our co-host and I guess the captain of this ship for the past 10 episodes. And thank you once again. And we cannot wait to bring you more Behind the Bump soon.
Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Behind the Bump.
If you loved today's episode, you can head to our Facebook group, Behind the Bump, where you can join in the conversation, find support, and so much more. It's linked in the show notes.
Until next week.
Bye-bye.